We're on Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph. The Gemara actually quotes a stira, a contradiction, between one statement of Rabbi Yehuda and another statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda here in Kol Shah, in the Mishnah, says that Ein Bir Chametz Ella Sreifa, that the only way of destroying chametz and fulfilling the mitzvah tashbisu is by burning the chametz. And the Chachamim say hashbisasu b'chol dover, that you could destroy the chametz in any method, in any means whatsoever. And the problem here is that Rabbi Yehuda bases himself, the Gemara says, on nosar. And the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda's logic, there is a great similarity between chametz and nosar. Just like in the case of nosar, the Torah tells you to destroy it by sreifa, so too chametz, which is similar to nosar, you have to destroy it by sreifa. And why is chametz similar to nosar? So the Gemara says here on the top of Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph, because just like in Nosar, the Torah says, Bal Tosiru, that you're not allowed to leave it over past its allotted time, so too in the case of Chametz, there's also a Bal Tosiru. It doesn't say those words in the Torah with regard to Chametz, but it says, Bal Yirah Bal Yimotze, it means don't leave the Chametz around, just get rid of it. So that great striking similarity between Chametz and Nosar allows Rabbi Yehuda to derive the conclusion that just as nosar needs sreifa, requires burning, so too does chametz require burning. But the Chachamim say that you, Rabbi Yehuda, contradict yourself, because elsewhere you actually require not sreifa but kvura in a very, very similar case. And here the Gemara quotes the cases of Ashem Toli and Chatas Ofa Bala Sofek. This was the last piece that we had on Thursday. Again, that was before Purim. So, you know, now we're in a different time zone. It's post-Purim. So if we try to remember what we said before Purim, that's hard. Anyway, so it says over here, there's something called Asham Tolui, which is an Asham that's brought ala Safek. A person doesn't know if he violated any Sakaris or he didn't violate any Sakaris. He didn't know if he ate Chelev or if he ate Shuman. So he has to bring a certain carbon Asham. And that's a carbon that's bala safek. And then we have another situation which is also similar, which is called chatas ofa bala safek. In the case of a leda, for example, she doesn't know if she had a leda of a nefel, or it was a real leda, a full-fledged leda. So she has to bring a chatas ofa bala safek. Now, in these cases, if the meat of the carbon, the basar carbon, is left over beyond its allotted time, then according to the logic of Rabbi Yehuda, as we'll soon see, this should have been sreifa. And yet, Rabbi Yehuda is going to replace sreifa with something called kvura. Instead of burning the meat, he's going to bury the meat. So let's read through the Gemara. Amru lo. This would be three lines down from the top of Chav Ches Amud Aleph. The Chacham turned to Rabbi Yehuda, and they say that you are inconsistent, Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because according to your logic here, deriving chametz from nosar, then Asham Tolui, and chatas ofa bala safek, lidvarech, according to your logic, yochichu, meaning they too are subject to bal tosiru, that description, and shehem v'bal tosiru, and yet Anu Omrim, we hold that the mitzvah of Nosar applies here as well in these two cases, and therefore Bisreifa. We'll see what that means in a minute. Vi'ata, but you, Rabbi Yehuda, elsewhere, Masechta Tmura, you have the opposite position, Omer Bikvura, that we don't destroy and we don't consume these two karbanos with burning, but rather with kvura. Now, let's go through these two karbanos, because there's a difference between the two. Because when the Gemara says b'kvura here, it's actually referring to basar asham tolui, not to chatas ha'of. Chatas ha'of ha'bol ha'safek, which is the case of leda that we gave before, where you don't know if she has a tumas leda and a chiyuv chatas, or she doesn't have a chiyuv chatas. So there the din of biur is that they cut up the karban into smaller pieces, and they, it says hashlocha, they throw it into an emas mayim ba'azara. In the azara there was a stream of water, and that's where they disposed of it. However, that's in the case of chatos ha'of habal asafik, in the later case. However, in the case of Asham Tolui, there the din is that if the karma becomes pasul, then Rabbi Yehuda says you require kvura. So I'm going to read to you a little bit here from the footnote that I have over here. It says that in the case of Asham Tolui, if the Asham becomes pasul, so the Rabbi Yehuda says in the Torah's Kohanim, you know, that's the Sifra on Vayikra in Parshas Tzav, which we just read yesterday. It says over there that there's a din of Sreifas Nosar with regard to the carbon on Miluim. So next week's Parsha, we're going to learn about the Miluim, you know, when they completed the Mishkan and all the karbonis they brought. And the Pasuk says, Visaraftas es anosar ba'esh lo ye ochel ki kodeshu. And Rabbi Yehuda makes a big deal about these words, ki kodeshu. And it tells you that not every nosar is included in this mitzvah of sreifa. Ki kodesh hu, whenever you see the word hu, it's a mute, it's coming to exclude. Lemait chatos of abola safek v'yoshen tolui. That these two karbonos, a chatos of abola safek and an oshem tolui, are excluded from the law of sreifa. V'ein sorfen es anosar shalahem. Now it's even though there was an allotted time for eating the meat, and you weren't allowed to pass that time, but if you did so, the Torah through this miyud of Kodesh Hu is coming to exclude these two cases from Sreifa. And the question is, and that's what the Chachomim say to Rabbi Yehuda, how could it be that you, Rabbi Yehuda, would exclude these karbonas from Sreifa? That apparently contradicts the very premise of Rabbi Yehuda, that anything that's included in Baal Tosiru should by definition therefore be included in Sreifa. So he has here a question from the Tzlach. He says that the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as far as Asham Toli is concerned is in a case where Shalifnei Zrikas Adam Shala Asham his bar lo odom shalo chata. Right, and Asham Toli means, I don't know, did I eat chaylev, did I not eat chaylev? Well, right before the Zrikas Adam, they found out that he ate shuman and not chaylev. So what do we do now with the karbon? And here we have makdish a karbon based on the fact that it was a suffix. Now we found out before the avodas a karbon that the person was not a chote, he was not guilty of any sin. Fine. So Rabbi Yehuda says, in this case, we suspend the law of beer, the general universal law of beer in Kodshim, and instead of Sreifa, what we do here is Kvura. Why? Kevan sheiz bar ha-dover shu chulin shenishktu ba-zara. Now we find out that this behema, this carbon, was not a carbon at all, because he didn't sin at all. He really wasn't chayav a carbon asham, and then it was chulin shenishktu ba'zara, so it doesn't have the status of a carbon. A carbon, by definition, is something that requires kapara. Here, he doesn't require kapara because, in fact, he ate shuman and not chalev. So, if that be the case, then here in our sugya, in the case of Asham Tolui, we're discussing a case where they took the dam of the Asham Tolu, they were zorik it on the Mizbeach, and then something happened to the basar. It became pasul, for whatever reason. Like it became nosar or something. And we're saying here that Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's no din of sreifas kodshim in the psul of an Asham Tolu. How do we know such a thing? Rabbi Yehuda only said that in the case where we found out that he ate shuman and not chalev. So there was never a carbon, there was never a chet, there was no need for kapara. How can you extend that to the case of an Ashem Tolu, she'ira bo psul? That's how it became possible. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if it became possible, he applied the universal principle of Sreifa. So the Tzlach off is the following answer. He says, "Im machlokos mirak bofen shiz barish hakarbon chulin." If we're going to limit this machlok shin lechachamim and Rabbi Yehuda to the case where we found out that this was not a carbon at all, matanu chachamim l'Rabbi Yehuda. What was the claim of Rabbi Yehuda of the chacham against Rabbi Yehuda? Sheyesh lifroch that we have a pircha mishitoso bedin. Hashem Tolui she'ena b'sreifar. Hashem Tolui said ein iser b'baltosir shereis bar she'ena karbon klal. So, in other words, if we only had this sugya in its original form, in the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachomim at the end of Tmura in Hashem Tolui, we would have no right and no way of understanding our sugya here in Psachim, because the Chachomim would not have any argument against Rabbi Yehuda based on Ashem Toli. Ashem Toli there is Chulin, and therefore there's no din of Sreifa. But because it's the entire din is Chulin Shenish Ktu Ba'azara, but what about Ashem Toli She'ira Bo Psul? Let's say it became Nosar. So apparently that's why Rashi here in Psachim extends the Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachom to every case of Ashem Toli. Whether A, he found out that he ate Shuman and therefore wasn't a carbon, or B, if the basar carbon became possible. In both cases, Rabbi Yehuda says, instead of requiring Sreifa, we're going to require Kvura. So just to summarize, what the Tzlach is trying to say is that our Gemara really breaks new ground in terms of the understanding of the Machlok Shin Chachom, Rabbi Yehuda, and Tmura. If we only had the Sugya and Tmura without our Sugya here, Psachim, we would have limited the Machlok Shin Rabbi Yehuda and Chachomim to the case of his barer, where it became clear that he did not violate an Iser Chelev, and therefore the carbon is not a carbon at all, and it's Chulin Shenish Ktubazar. Our Gemara takes it a step further, and Rabbi Yehuda took the Ashem Tolui carbon out of the parish of Sreif entirely, even in a case where they were makri of the carbon, and then the basar became possible. Even in that case, Rabbi Yehuda requires Kvura rather than Sreifa. And that's an exception to a contradiction to his rule here, that whenever there's Baal Tosir, you require Sreifa. Shasak Rabbi Yehuda. And the impression you get from this Gemara is that Rabbi Yehuda had no reconciliation. He was left with a question, but nevertheless he never dropped the ball on his original shita that chametz like nosa requires sreifa. Lo chazer bo Rabbi Yehuda. He never rescinded his original position. Now it could be that since Rabbi Yehuda derived chametz from nosar and a kal v'chomer, again the Gemara earlier says that it's not exactly a kal v'chomer because it's, you remember, it's a chumra shemevi l'dekula. If he doesn't have eitzim, he's not going to be able to burn the chametz. He won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu, as we discussed. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda still insists on his kal v'chomer, and therefore, if you have the kal v'chomer, that's one of the bidul shatorin dreshes b'hem, and therefore we derive that chametz requires sreifa. So now we have a little bit of an agadita, so to speak. What the Gemara wants to do is the Gemara wants to give us three mishalim for what happens when we discover a contradiction between two statements of the same Tano, the same Amora. And the Gemara gives three similes, three mishalim. Rav Yosef says that this situation in which you find a contradiction between two statements of the same Amora is reminiscent of a certain idiomatic colloquialism. Hainu diamri inchi, people say kapa de chata nagra begava nisro chardala. Kappa is an Aramaic conjugation of the word kaf in Hebrew. A kaf is a large spoon. And chata means lachkok. Lachkok means you take a piece of wood and you engrave, you chisel away at the wood until it becomes a spoon. And who does such a thing? A nagra, some sort of a specialized carpenter. That was his job. And then this carpenter, after he created the spoon, he used it to eat something that had in it chardala. Chardala, which is chardal, is a very sharp food, sharp mustard. It almost like burns your tongue. So he dug with this spoon, he dug into some sort of a mixture, and he ended up burning up his mouth. So the paradox is that he created the spoon, but at the end of the day, he was injured, so to speak, as a result. He was harmed as a result of the spoon. Abai gives another colloquialism, and also symbolic of the same idea. Omar, he says the following. Sadona b'sidnei Yosef midvil yidei mishtalim. Now, sadona again is an Aramaic word for the Hebrew sadon. What they used to do is they used to take wood and they would carve out a hole on the bottom, on the flat part of the wood. And when they had an asir, that means somebody who was incarcerated, he was thrown into jail and they wanted to tie up his legs to make sure he didn't run away. So they used to put his feet, lock it up in this thing called a sadin. I don't know if there's an English counterpart for it.
Stockade.
Stockade it's called? Exactly. Excellent. So he says the following, that sometimes the very manufacturer, this carpenter who created this sadan, he himself will get locked up in the sadan. Let's see if we translate the Aramaic here. He says, Bisidne Yosef, right? He may get caught sitting in this very trap that he created. And midvil yidei is called in Hebrew haramas yodayim, mishtalim. Okay, let's just see. So what happens is the following. He created this stockade, if you call it. Did I get that right? Yeah. And he gives it over to the authorities. They pay for it, obviously. So he gets a salary for creating this thing. Now, when they catch a thief and they want to bring him to justice, so they lock his feet up in this stockade. And now what happened is that he himself, the manufacturer, the carpenter, was tried and as a ganav, and he himself was the thief. And they're going to use the very object that he created to give him his punishment. So again, you know, it's like this concept where you created something and you end up falling prey to that very same object. Rava Amar, Rava gives a third mashal, and he says, Gira'a begire miktil. Gire is an arrow that you send out, chitzim. So a person sends out arrows, and madvil yidei mishtalim, that sometimes the arrow itself boomerangs and kills him himself. Or maybe when he finishes creating the arrow, maybe he sells it on the open market, and then the person who buys it actually uses the arrow against him. So I have a note here from the Bnei, from the Benayahu, what's he called? The Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai tries to explain, how are you, why there are three different mishalim. Why did the Gemara need to give three different idiomatic explanations of what's going on? So he says that it goes min akal el achamur, from the less severe to the more severe. And he says the following. In the first case, he created this stockade in which his feet were tied up eventually. He says there's still a key to unlock it and you can get the feet out. So he says in this case there was a contradiction in between two statements. Let's say they were both both basically the same kind of statements. They're based on logic, on svara. So we'll find some way of reconciling the two statements. In the second case, it's a little bit more severe. And in the third case, it's the most severe, because in the third case, so the first case, you remember, was the Chardal case, right? So, okay, so he ends up with this spoon eating something very sharp. All right, so he'll have to drink a little extra liquids here to offset the harmful balance of the effect of the Chardal. In the second case, a little bit more severe, but they could still get him out of it. And in the third case, he dies as a result of the chitzim that he himself created. Which means that this is an absolute irreconcilable conclusion. Like, for example, let's say his first statement was based on svara, and his second statement was based on yalfusa, on a pasul. It's very difficult to reconcile that. He's going to have to somehow rescind his original statement. He's going to have to kill, so to speak, his original position. Okay. Now we start the sugya for today. You remember that according to the Chachamim, there's no need to burn chametz to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. You have many other options. Chachamim omrim in haMishnah, mefarer v'zora l'ruach omatil yam. So let's analyze the words of the Chachamim if we take them literally. Mefarer means we crumble up the chametz. Vizora l'ruach, and we throw up the crumbs to the wind, and the wind carries away the crumbs. That's fine. Then it says, "O matil liyam," or you can take the crumb, or you can take the chametz, and you can throw it into the river or into the sea. So the Gemara is not sure how to interpret "O matil liyam," because there's a word at the beginning of the Chachamim statement that says mefarer, that you have to crumble up the chametz. Does that word introduce zora l'ruach, and only zora l'ruach, which means that before you throw it to the wind, you're going to have to crumble it into small pieces, otherwise the wind will not be able to carry it at a distance. But when it gets to matil yam, that you can just take a full loaf of bread, intact, and throw it into the river. Or no, even in the case of matil yam, first what you have to do is mefarer, you have to crumble up the chametz into small pieces, and then and only then can you be matil yam. Iboiluhu, the Gemara says it was a suffix in the yeshiva, they didn't know how to interpret, hechi komar. What do the chachamim mean over here? And the first understanding is mefarer v'zora l'ruach, mefarer umatil yam. You take the word mefarer as a general introduction to the entire formulation with all its possibilities. As mefarer is a word that introduces both zora l'ruach and matil yam. So even when you're throwing it into the river, you need first to crumble the chametz. O dilma, or should we take another approach? Mefarer v'zora l'ruach. You put a semicolon after mefarer v'zora l'ruach, and then aval matil yam. Your other option, your alternative, is to throw the chametz into the river, b'ene, in its state of be'en, fully intact. You don't have to crumble it down. And the Gemara says that I'll show you a parallel Mishnah in Masechta Avodah Zarah. And the same exact question we have in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Torah commands us to destroy Avodah Zarah. And the Rambam formulates this at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Zayin. He says, Mitzvah Saseh, we have a positive command, La'abed Avodah Zarah U'mishamshel, to destroy Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, Abed ta'abdun, Poskim Parshas Re'ei and Sefer Dvarim, Es kol ha'makomos asher avdu shom ha'goyim, V'nitatztem es mizbichoseyem, V'shibartem es matzevoseyem, V'yashreyem tisrufum ba'esh, U'psile Eloheyem tigadeyun. How do you fulfill this mitzvah of destroying La'abed Avodah Zarah? Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi says the following: Zore laruach. I'm sorry, I skipped the key word here. Sorry, shochek vizore laruach o matiliyav. Now, the word shochek is appropriate for a metal utensil. And this metal utensil was used in a form of worship, of idol worship. And therefore it has to be destroyed. However, in order to destroy it, first you have to do what's called shchika. Shchika means to pulverize it, really just completely break it down into a small, to small parts.
You break it into pieces.
Pieces, excellent. Vizora, what do you do with these pieces? You throw them up laruach, and then they get separated, they get spread out throughout the land. And then it says, oh, your second alternative is matil yam. You can take these pieces and throw them into the river. And once again, the Gemara there in Avodah Zarah has the following suffix. E boilahu, we don't know. Hechi komar, what did the statement of Rabbi Yossi mean? Is it A or is it B? A is shochek v'zora l'ruach. O, shochek umatil liyam. So in both alternatives, you need shchika, certainly, clearly, before you throw it into the air. And not only that, even before you throw it into the water, you cannot take a clear utensil intact and throw it into the water. That's not called ibud. Ibud requires shchika. O Dilma, the other possibility, says the Gemara, is that the word shochek only refers to zora l'ruach, but aval matil yam be'enei, you could take the utensil and throw it into the sea. I mean, who's going fishing to find this utensil? It's considered avud, it's considered lost, even if you didn't do shchika. If you're throwing it to the air, so the wind is going to carry a kli, somebody's going to pick up the kli, it's still functional, it's still an entity of Avodah Zarah. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah of La'aved. You know, this La'aved means that if somebody would come across this thing, he won't be able to have any benefit from it. That's called Ibud. You know, to measure the barometer for Ibud is to make it in such a way that no one's going to be able to have access to it. And once you do the shchika, and then you throw it up to the wind, okay, the wind is going to take all these pieces and spread them around. If somebody, by chance, you know, happens to find a piece, it's no longer functional. Yeah, it reminds me, again, Lahavdil, here in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, sometimes when they shoot rockets, you know, and stuff like that, then they get very careful. Some of those rockets can be very, pieces of rockets can be dangerous. But anyway, the Shabak and all those different organizations have to collect all those pieces and make sure that they're neutralized. So if you break up pieces of metal, then even if somebody chances upon one of those pieces, that's not going to be a kli. But in the case of Matil Yam, here the Gemara vacillates back and forth. Is it enough that you throw a vessel intact without breaking it up into pieces into the sea? No one's going fishing for it. Or no, maybe somebody will go fishing. You know, somebody is out there on an ocean. He's on a boat. And lo and behold, you know, he's trying to catch fish and he catches a piece of Avodah Zarah. Of course, that itself proves that the Avodah Zarah was not destroyed. The very fact that he might find it. Now, so far at this point in the sugya, the Gemara is assuming a parallel between the mitzvah of tashbisu of destroying chametz and the mitzvah of abe to abdun in Avodah Zarah. And whatever your criterion is here, that should be the same criterion there. So if you're going to tell me that in chametz I need to be mafarer before I throw it into the water, because I'm always afraid that some fisherman is going to catch this loaf of bread if it's intact, then in Avodah Zarah I have to be afraid that the same fisherman might catch in his net this kli that was used for Avodah Zarah, and therefore I need shchiko, or in the case of chametz I need mafarer. Or do we say, no, we're not afraid of ships, we're not afraid of fishermen, and therefore, in the case of chametz, we could just throw it into the yam intact. In the case of Avodah Zarah, we could throw it into the yam intact. Amar Rabba says no. let's not accept this equation. Mistavra, logic commands us that avodah zarah d'liyama melech ka'oz lo boi shechita b'chametz d'lishar naharos ka'ozil boi peirur. Now Rava is going to distinguish between avodah zarah, which does not require shechita, as opposed to chametz, which does require shechita or peirur. Let's leave out Rava for just 1 minute, because the more simple approach is Rav Yosef. He also is going to, come up with some distinction between avodah zarah and chametz. But his distinction goes in the opposite direction. In other words, whereas Rav is going to try to convince us that in avodah zarah you don't need shechita, Rav Yosef is going to say no, in avodah zarah you need shechita. Why? Because avodah zarah is a vessel, a complete vessel. It's a metal vessel, and when you throw it into the river, what happens to the vessel?
Stays
nothing.
Intact.
Exactly, it stays intact. The lo memisa.
Right.
There's no process by which you melt down or dissolve or disintegrate this kli. Is therefore boy shchika. You can't say that you fulfill the mitzvah of abe to abdun if the avodah zarah is exactly identical, just its location has changed. But chametz, when you take a loaf of bread intact and you throw it into the water, the memis, it gets dissolved, is lo boi pirur. That can be an action of tashbisu and biur, even in the absence of crumbling the bread. So that's how I wanted to start with Rav Yosef, because I think Rav Yosef is a lot simpler. So again, if you want to know whether or not you need shechika, whether or not you need pirur, let's differentiate between the two, says Rav Yosef. In the case of chametz, you don't need pirur. Take a loaf of bread, throw it into the river, and it's going to fall apart. It's going to disintegrate. In the case of avodah zarah, where the object that was worshipped is made of metal, there, if you don't have shechika, then when you throw it into the river, it's going to remain intact, exactly as it was as avodah zarah. So now let's go back to Rava. Omar Rava. So Rava says the following. If you take a look carefully at the case of Avodah Zarah, when the Mishnah says in Avodah Zarah, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, O Matil Liyam, it doesn't refer to yam in a generic sense, but rather it refers to yam hamelach. Now the difference between yam hamelach, which is obviously salt water, and other live, you know, waterways, is that you don't find anyone traveling on yam hamelach.
No fishing.
I mean, or fishing on yam hamelach, for sure not. You know, people may swim in the Yam HaMelech, but that's only a short distance. So the Gemara says the following, that in the case of Avodah Zarah, there you're not going to require shechika, and your option of throwing it into the Yam is a valid option in and of itself, without shechita, if you're throwing it into the Yam HaMelech. So when it says in Rabbi Yossi, O Matil Yam, he's referring to Yam HaMelach. In the case of Yam HaMelach, lo boi shechika. We don't need to take this utensil and break it into pieces. But rather you can take it as is and put it into the Yam HaMelach. No one's going to pick up this kli in the Yam HaMelach. If you were to throw it into other waterways, then we're afraid that somebody goes by in a boat and he might come and take it away. But here we're limiting our destruction of the avodah zarah to the Yam HaMelech. Chametz d'lishar naharos ka'azil. In other words, when it says in our Mishnah in the name of the Chachamim that you can take the chametz and throw it into the Yam, it doesn't have any particular body of water in mind. And therefore we can include even Shar Naharos. Oh, you're including Shar Naharos, any kind of a river, by Peru. Then we have to be afraid that people as opposed to Yam HaMelech, people have access to what's floating on the surface of the Yam, of the waterway, whatever that waterway might be, and therefore you must require Pirur before you throw it into the Yam. So I want to read to you a note here. He says the following, that if you look in the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, so the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah in Daf Mem Beis says Hamotzi Kelim, you find utensils, V'aleim Tzuras Chama V'Tzuras Levana. In other words, back in the day when you found certain engravings in the utensil, you knew that this was for Avodah Zarah purposes. And then it says in the Mishnah, Yolichenu Liyam HaMelach, that you bring it to the Yam HaMelech, and that's where you dispose of it. Apparently, the Yam HaMelech alone, even without Shechika, is sufficient. But when it says in our Mishnah, Matil Liyam, it doesn't only mean a Yam. Any gathering of water is considered a Yam. And there are various psukim in the Tanakh that indicate that. So therefore, with regard to Chametz, we don't have this leniency. In other words, you could be more lenient in Yam HaMelech, and therefore in the case of Avodah Zarah, what do you need? You need just to throw it into the Yam HaMelech, because there's no one available in Yam HaMelech who's going to dig up this utensil. But if you're throwing it to Shar Naharos, that's a problem. If you take a look at Tosis, Dibra Maskel Chometz, he says, Chometz l'shar nahoros, lo matzinu shohayashone b'shum mokom gabi chometz Yam HaMelech. We don't have any source that when it says about chometz that you throw into the Yam, it's referring specifically to Yam HaMelech. Aval gabi Avodah Zarah, in the Avodah Zarah, Ashkechan b'kama duchtin, like for example, the Mishnah right before the Mishnah that we're studying now, it says, Yolech hanol liyam HaMelech. Hilkok stam yam d'toni gabi Avodah Zarah. Whenever the Gemara says that in Avodah Zarah you throw it into the yam, havi yam HaMelech. Now, what would be in the case of, just one second, in the case of Shar Naharos? According to Rabbah, the only reason you didn't need Shechika is because where were you throwing this utensil? Into Yam HaMelech. Apparently, if it was Shar Naharos, then even Rabbah would require Shechika. So that's what Tosus points out here. He says, Umil l'Rabbah mo'el Shechika b'Shar Naharos. Don't think that Rabbah completely excludes the possibility of taking this utensil that was worshipped, that had a din of Avodah Zarah, and it's impossible to throw it into the Yam without Shechika. No, even Rabbah would validate throwing into a Yam without Shechika. But that's only in the case of what? Of Yam HaMelech. But now you might think that according to Rabbah, there is no case in which we require Shechika. Because again, keep in mind that Rabbah was the one who said that in Chometz you require Pirur, and the power to Pirur in Avodah Zarah is going to be Shechika. Rabbah also agrees that you do require Shechika in Avodah Zarah, like Pirur in Chometz, if you're throwing the Avodah Zarah to Shar Naharos. The only time in which we could drop the requirement of Shechika in Avodah Zarah is if we're throwing the Avodah Zarah into the Yam HaMelech. That's what I think Tosfos is pointing out here. Dibra Maskel Chometz. Comes on Rav Yosef and he says just the opposite. In the case of Avodah Zarah, you cannot avail yourself of the leniency of throwing it into Yam HaMelech intact, because lo mimisa. And if I understand correctly, what he means is that this is not called ibud. You'll tell me that there are very few ships that sail on the Dead Sea. That could be true. You need a very big an ocean liner with engines and so forth to get through the Yam HaMelech. Yam HaMelech is stagnant. But nevertheless, the Torah says, Abi ta abdu, that you have to destroy it. And Avodah Zarah lo mimisa. It doesn't get dissolved without Shechika. You can't just throw it into the Yam HaMelech and say, well, poof, it disintegrated. It doesn't disintegrate. It's made of metal. But if you're going to apply that same logic to chametz, which is not metal, but rather it's a loaf of bread that's made of soft substance that could get wet and get dissolved, here I'm willing to say we can drop the requirement of mefarer and throw it directly into the yam. The strange thing is that Rava is not willing to accept the possibility in chametz of throwing into shar nahoros. He requires pure. And again, the reason for it is that there are sphinos, there are boats going by in Shar Nahoros.
It may take too long for it to dissolve. I mean,
correct.
Throw a loaf in.
Right. According to Rava, it's not going to dissolve immediately. So there's that time period, that time lapse, and that's what we're afraid. So in other words, Rava requires immediate ibud, or tashbisu, in the case of chametz, immediate tashbisu, and that you can't have by throwing into water, even though it's memisa. Tanya kavase de Rava v'tanya kavase de Rav Yosef. We had one braisa to support Rava and another to support Rav Yosef. Tanya kavase de Rava, hoya mahalif ba midbar. It's erev Pesach. It's the time to get rid of his chametz, and he's far away from his home. His home. And he knows he has chametz at home. I'm sorry. Let me go over this one more time. The braisa says that he's mahalich ba midbar before, and he realizes it's time for bir chametz, and he has chametz on him, but he's now in the midbar. So what does he do? Is mafarer v'zora l'ruach? That makes sense, right? We said according to Chachamim, you could crumble chametz and let it go to the wind, throw it up to the wind. Oh, but now get the exciting part of the braisa. Hoya mahalich b'sfina. He is on a boat, and now he has the option of throwing the chametz overboard. But the braisa says mefarer umatil yom. It's not enough that he throw it overboard into the water. He needs to crumble it down. This will support Rava, because Rava said that we can eliminate, we can bracket the requirement of shchika and avodah zarah because he's throwing it into the Yam HaMelech. But with regard to chametz, Rava says you need to do an act of pirur. So whereas in avodah zarah you could do away with shchika, but in chametz he insists that you do mafarer umatil yam, and that's exactly what it says here in this braisa. But Tanya kavosi de Rav Yosef, are you mahalech ba midbar? If he finds himself in the desert, and in this case he has avodah zarah in his possession, is shochek v'zorah l'ruach? Okay, that's fine. He's got to break down the avodah zarah into its smaller pieces and then throw it up to the wind. But hayu mahalech b'sfina, if he's going in the ship, is shochek umatil yam? He has to destroy, he has to break the avodah zarah into small pieces and then throw it into the yam. And that's against Rava, because if you remember, Rava said that when it comes to avodah zarah, you're throwing it into the Yam HaMelech and that's sufficient. This braisa would seem to assume that no, you have to do shchika, because it says here shochek v'zor l'ruach. And according to Rabbi, you don't need shchika. This would support the sheet of Rav Yosef that says that you can take avodah zarah, and what you do with it is you do shchika, and then you zorah l'yam. In other words, Rav Yosef was the one who required shchika because the water is not going to dissolve the avodah zarah. So now the Gemara says shchika kashil l'Rava, peirur kashil Rav Yosef. We have now two questions to ask. In other words, each Amora, Rav and Rav Yosef, would like to square with all the braises. None of them would like to admit that there's a braisa that contradicts them. But yet, we saw in the second braisa that Avodah Zarah requires shchika. That's against Rav. Rav says, you just throw it into the yam. And on the other hand, we had a braisa, that was the first braisa, that says that you need pirur in the case of chametz. Well, Rabbi Yosef says you don't need pirur in the case of chametz. It'll dissolve in the water. So now the Gemara answers both questions. Shchikol Rabba lo kasha. The fact that in the case of Avodah Zorah, the brisa requires shchika. That was the second brisa. Is the Rabba lo kasha? Why? Ha liyamamelech ha l'shar nahara. So this brisa is the exception to the rule. Our rule of thumb, as we discussed earlier, is that whenever it says liyam in Avodah Zorah, it means Yam HaMelech. Here's the exception. This brisa, which says that you require shchika before you get rid of the Avodah Zorah and throw it into the water, that's because we're talking about other waterways, other bodies of water, not Yam HaMelech. So that was easy enough. But now we have a kasha of Yosef. The brisa, the first brisa, says that with regard to chametz, he finds himself on a boat with chametz. What does he do with the chametz on the boat? It says he has to do pirur. Well, according to Rav Yosef, why not just throw it overboard? Pirur Rav Yosef lo kasha. I have an answer to Rav Yosef from the brisa of pirur. Ha b'chite ha b'nahama. There are two types of chametz. One type of chametz, it lends itself to memis, meaning it dissolves, and one does not dissolve. Let's go through the two cases. The first case is chite. He's on a boat, and he has kernels of wheat that became chametz. They became wet, and they fermented. Now, kernels of wheat are considered something hard. You know, it's not like an airy, soft, porous loaf of bread. And therefore, in this case, unless you mafire it, it's going to remain intact even after you throw it into the water. And he quotes here Rishonim who say the following. This is Rashi and other Rishonim. They say, I'll read it to you, that and that's not enough. Why? If he doesn't do pirur, he says that people will not be able to collect these chitim if you do the pirur, right? If you first subject the chitim, the kernels of wheat, to crumbling. But if you would, let's say, throw the chitim in a bag or something into the water, yeshlach shosha adam yitlem v'lo yeda shem chametz v'yavol yochlam. Okay, he's going through a chashash derabbanon, and he's saying that maybe people will find it and they'll eat it. I would say, well, the very fact that people might find it and it's edible, that means that he didn't do tashbisu, he didn't destroy it. And that's in the case of kernels. For her, but our Mishnah that says that you can take chametz and throw it into the waters, that's benahama, a full-fledged, regular loaf of bread that's been baked, and therefore it's mamis, it gets dissolved as soon as you throw it in, there's no need for pirur. So let's just go over the two exceptions to one for Rabba and one for Rav Yosef. The exception for Rabba is going to be Shar Nahoros. Then in the case of Avodah Zorah, in Shar Nahoros, you're going to require Shechika. And the exception for Rav Yosef, where Matil Liyam, even without pirur, is enough in Chametz, that's going to be in the case of Chite. In the case of Chitim, the water will not destroy the Chametz, and therefore you have to do pirur before you send it into the womb. At this point, Rabosa, we're going to start a new Mishnah, and this Mishnah is going to occupy our minds for a long time. So let's hope that we can understand the introduction that I'm going to give you in the first line in the Mishnah. This is very, very important. We have a concept of chametz kodim zmano, chametz li'achar zmano, and chametz tov zmano. Now, chametz tov zmano is the easiest case, because that's the 7 days of Pesach, and as long as you maintain possession over your chametz, you violate a lo taseh of bal yirah bal yimotzi. That's unquestionable. The Torah says, shivas yomim siyor lo yimotzi bebateichem, v'lo yirah lecha chametz lo yirah chol tsa'ar b'chol gvulecha. It means that you're not allowed to have chametz for the 7 days in your possession. Okay, that's during the 7 days of Pesach. What about Kodem Zmano and Li'achar Zmano? So let's we'll go backwards. We'll start from the end. Li'achar Zmano means that he possessed the chametz during the 7 days of Pesach. He did not destroy it. What's the status of that chametz after Pesach? So that's called chametz she'avel of a Pesach. And our mission is going to record a machlokas tanoim as to whether or not the Torah prohibits chametz she'avel of a Pesach. According to one Tana, the Torah never prohibited it. The Torah only prohibited it during the 7 days. The Rabbanan will institute a knas, a penalty, that insofar as he had possession over the chametz, therefore we're not going to allow him to have any benefit from this chametz after Yontif. That's only a derabbanan. We'll have one Tana who's of the opinion that the chametz is also midoraisa after Pesach. Now we have chametz kodem zmano. That means on the 14th of Nisan, ach bayom arishon, ach chilek. We're going to divide up the 14th into two halves, right? So we have the first half, which is up until Chatzos, and then we have from Chatzos and on. Up until Chatzos, the Torah allows you to enjoy chametz. What does the Torah say about chametz in your possession after Chatzos? Do you violate Bal Yirah by Yimotzeh? Just based on this pasuk, ach bayom arishon tashpisu, that's going to be a machlokas tanoim as well. Now, until this point, we've assumed that chametz has a triple header isur. Number one, it's also bachila, and if a person eats chametz on Pesach, he gets kares. We're never going to question that assumption. But then we have two other assumptions. We have chametz that's also b'hanoah, and we're going to have a major question about that. We assume that you cannot feed chametz to a dog, you cannot sell chametz to a guy or give it to him as a gift. Chametz is isur hanoah. The Gemara is going to question that. Rabbi Yossi Aglio is going to in fact say, no, chametz is mutar hanoah. And finally, we have the third Isur of chametz, and that's Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzeh, that you're not allowed to possess chametz. And we're going to have machlokas whether that applies even before nightfall on the 14th of Nisan. Now, chametz shel nochri, the Mishnah opens up, she'avar lav ha-pesach, mutar b'hanoah. If the chametz was in the possession of the guy over the course of Yontif, then there's no Isur hanoah, because the chametz, nothing has been violated as far as the ownership of the chametz. The guy is not enjoined from owning chametz. And now when the Mishnah says mutar hanoah, don't misunderstand the Mishnah saying you're allowed to have hanoah from this chametz after Pesach, but you're not allowed to eat the chametz. If the guy invites you to eat the chametz, or you go into a supermarket that was owned by a guy and you buy chametz immediately after Pesach, you're allowed to eat it. Take it home and eat it. So mutar hanoah really means mutar b'achila uba hanoah. V'shel Yisrael. Aber, what's going to be if the chametz was owned by Yisrael? And now it's after Pesach. So the Mishnah says, Aser b'hanoah. Now, is that an Isur d'oraisa? Or is that a knas d'rabbanan? So look at the hemshech of the Mishnah. Shenemar. From the fact it says Shenemar, what does that indicate? Are we dealing with the d'oraisa or the d'rabbanan? Don't only answer at once. I'm saying if it says Shenemar.
Seems d'oraisa.
Right. As soon as you see the word Shenemar anywhere in Shas, you know that we're dealing with the d'oraisa until proven otherwise. Now I'm going to read the whole pasuk to you. It says, Lo yirah lecha chametz. And then it says, Velo yirah lecha si'ar b'chol gvulecha. B'chol gvulecha. Okay. Now, how does that pasuk indicate that chametz after Pesach is aser b'hanoah if it was owned by Yisrael? And the answer has to be that since he violated the Isur of Lo Yirah Lecha Si'ar, he had possession over this chametz during the course of Pesach, and he was not allowed to leave the chametz where it was in his possession. Is now we're going to impose upon him an Isur after Pesach. But wait a second. We just said that Shenemar indicates that it's d'oraisa. Well, that would be true if the pasuk was telling you something about chametz during Pesach. And that, in fact, is the subject of this pasuk. During Pesach, there's an Issa Doraisa, Lo Yirov, and Lo Yimotzei. However, we're talking about after Pesach. So how could the Gemara quote this pasuk, Lo Yirov L'chasiyar V'chol G'vulech? What does that tell me about Chametz after Pesach? And the answer is, Knas D'Rabbanon. Okay, we're going to see later on another Tata who's going to say the Chametz Shavuot of Pesach is Doraisa. Okay, now we're going to look in the Gemara. We only have a few minutes left. I'll try to finish up quickly. If a person eats chametz on Pesach, he violates a lav of lo yachel chametz, and he gets kares for that. The Torah says, ki kol ochel chametz v'nichras ha-nefesh ahi mi-Yisrael. And now we have a machlokas tanoim. Does this Yisro lav of lo yachel chametz include even Erev Pesach, after Chatzos Hayom? We're going to see it depends upon psukim that connect the Yisro Chametz to the Shechita, the Karban Pesach. And therefore we might be able to generate an Yisro Doraisa of Achilas Chametz on Erev Pesach. Again, after Chatzos, which is the time for the Shechita, the Karban Pesach. Then we're going to see that Chametz Sha'aval of a Pesach might also be included in the Yisro Achila on a Doraisa level. We're going to have another machlokas about chametz bahano, whether, as I said before, the chametz is also bahano or only b'achila. So the Gemara says, Mani Masnisin, who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rab Yehuda, v'lo Rab Shimon, v'lo Rab Yossi Aglili. Now again, we'll get to Rab Yossi Aglili much later on, but now we're going to focus on Rab Yehuda and Rab Shimon. Maihi, what is the brisa that records the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? The sanya we learned in the brisa, chametz bein lifnei zmano, ubein liachar zmano, over olav belav, but tos mano over love belav akaris. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says the following: there's going to be a lav da oraisa, both with regard to chametz lifnei zmano, meaning erev Pesach from Chatzos and on, and chametz liachar zmano, meaning after Pesach. In both these cases, you violate a lav. The only difference between that and during Pesach is that during Pesach, you get kares if chas v'shalom you eat chametz. But before Pesach and after Pesach, that's a separate lav, but it doesn't generate an Easter kares, a punishment of kares. That's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says the following. And now we turn to Chav Ches Amid Beis. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Chavitz Lifnei Zmano, Uli Acher Zmano, over Olav below Klum. Tov Zmano, over Olav, Bekares, Ubala. So is Rabbi Yehuda has a lav for Chavitz Kodim Zmano and a lav for Li Acher Zmano, without, albeit without Kares? Rabbi Shimon rejects it entirely, and he says both be Kodem Zmano and Liachar Zmano, there's no Iser Lav, not even an Iser Lav, as far as Chametz is concerned. Tov Zmano over Olav B'Lav, B'Karisu B'Lav. U'mishosh Ha'osav Achila Osav Mano. This is a general statement of the Braisa at the conclusion, that once Chametz becomes Osav Achila, becomes Osav Mano. So the Gemara says the following, that Ason L'Tana Kama. In other words, this last statement in the Braisa, that Chametz becomes Osir Banof, from the very moment it becomes Osir Bachila, that reflects the first Tana of this Braisa, which is Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that Chametz is Osir Bachila from Chatzos Hayom on Erev Pesach. And therefore the Gemara, the Braisa mentions that from that moment of time becomes Osur, not only Bachila, but Osur Bano. This is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Chametz is Osur, Bein Bachila, Bein Banar, on Erev Pesach, from Chatzos Hayom. And finally, we have the Shita of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Toma Al Atzmecha, Heich Chametz, Osur Bano, Kol Shiva. How is it possible that chametz is osur bano kol shiva? So, believe that tomorrow we're going to try to analyze this argument of Rabbi Yossi. What did Rabbi Yossi mean when he said tom al atzmecha? How could it be that chametz is osur bano Well, what was the basis for his question? And then tomorrow, Blinetta will have to try to see if any of these three Tanoim mentioned in the Brisa can be, if any one of them can be a candidate for authorship of our Mishnah. The Gemara is going to try to prove that our Mishnah seems to have another Shita that doesn't reflect itself neither in Rabbi Yehuda, nor in Rabbi Shimon, nor in Rabbi Yossi, in Rabbi Yossi Agli. Okay then? So we'll stop here. And let's make a note that tomorrow Blinetta will start on the top of Daf Chof Ches Omen Davis. If anyone wants to learn Hilchas Pesach, you know, Mishaburo, we'll start at 10 o'clock. Because, you know, it says Korma Chag, Shloshim Yom, you have to learn the halachas of the Chag. And, you know, we've been learning the Sect of Psachim, but the halachas are much more Lamaisa, you know, with all the details. Okay then.